All right, get ready, because today we're diving deep into your physiology notes about the nervous system.
Oh, this should be fun.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the network that controls everything, like from your reflexes to your thoughts. So
it really is fascinating, yeah.
It is. You've got some really good material here from that class. I'm really excited to get into it.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, so to kick things off, what stood out to you most in these notes? Was there anything that made you go like, whoa, I didn't know that?
Well, you know the blood-brain barrier?
Yeah.
You know that super selective shield that protects the brain?
Right.
It's fascinating how it impacts everything, like drug delivery to treating neurological diseases.
Oh, for sure.
Imagine having to design a medication that can actually cross that barrier and get to the brain.
Yeah.
It's a huge challenge for researchers.
That's a great point. It's like the brain has its own exclusive VIP club.
Yeah.
And not just anything can get past the bouncer.
Exactly. And this selectivity highlights just how delicate and complex the central nervous system is.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of the central nervous system, these notes go into the spinal cord's role as this information superhighway, like shuttling signals between the brain and the body.
Right.
But it's not just a passive messenger, is it? It can actually make decisions on its own.
You're thinking of reflexes.
Okay.
That quick withdrawal of your hand from a hot stove, that's your spinal cord, acting independently, processing the input, and starting a motor response before the signal even reaches the brain.
So it's like the spinal cord has its own like mini brain making these split second decisions to keep us safe.
It's a remarkable example of how the nervous system is organized for both rapid response and higher level processing.
Totally. Okay, so now shifting gears to the brain itself, the command center.
Yeah.
I always think it's so fascinating how each region has its own specific role, you know?
Yeah, it's like an intricate symphony with different sections of the orchestra all coming together.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. So let's break down the sections, starting with the brainstem. What's its main thing?
The brainstem is the unsung hero,
okay,
responsible for all those vital functions we take for granted.
Yeah.
Breathing, heart rate, sleep-wake cycles, it's all orchestrated by this often overlooked region.
So while we're going about our day, the brainstem is down there working tirelessly behind the scenes.
Absolutely. And it also houses most of the cranial nerves, which control things like facial expressions, eye movements, and even taste.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, all those functions seem pretty essential, yeah, for existing.
Indeed. Now, moving on to the cerebellum, this region is all about coordination and finesse.
Okay.
Think about a skilled athlete, a dancer, or even just someone gracefully navigating a crowded street.
Right.
That's the cerebellum at work, ensuring smooth, precise movements and maintaining balance.
So if my tennis serve is on point,
mm-hmm,
I can thank my cerebellum for that.
You got it. It's constantly receiving sensory information and making those subtle adjustments to our movements, keeping us from, you know, stumbling and fumbling through life.
Yeah, I'm starting to appreciate just how much multitasking is happening inside our skulls.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so on to the diencephalon. What's going on in that part of the brain?
Okay, so the diencephalon is home to two key players, the thalamus and the hypothalamus.
Okay.
The thalamus acts like the brain's sensory relay station. So think about all the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and textures that you experience.
Right.
All that sensory information gets routed through the thalamus before it reaches the higher processing centers of the brain.
Wow. So it's like the grand central station,
yeah,
of the brain.
Yeah, a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Now, the hypothalamus is all about maintaining balance, keeping your internal environment running smoothly.
Okay.
It regulates things like body temperature, hunger, thirst, and even those sleep-wake cycles.
So if I'm craving a snack and feeling a little sleepy after lunch, I can blame my hypothalamus.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's constantly monitoring your internal state and making adjustments to keep everything in equilibrium.
Okay, so now for the cerebrum.
The big boss.
The big boss of the brain. This is where things get really interesting, right?
Yeah.
All those higher-level thinking skills, learning, decision making, that's all happening here.
Precisely. And the star of the show here is the cerebral cortex, the outermost layer of the cerebrum.
Okay.
It's responsible for our conscious thought, language, and sensory perception.
So basically, everything that makes us uniquely human is happening in that wrinkly outer layer of the brain.
In essence, yes. And the cerebral cortex is divided into four lobes, each with specialized functions. We have the frontal lobe, the parietal lobe, the occipital lobe, and the temporal lobe.
Okay, so let's break down these lobes and what they bring to the table. What's the frontal lobe all about?
Think of the frontal lobe as the executive suite of the brain.
Okay.
It's involved in planning, decision-making, problem-solving, and even personality traits. This is where you weigh the pros and cons, set goals, and control your impulses.
So my ability to plan a trip, resist that extra slice of cake, and maintain some semblance of composure during rush hour, that's all thanks to my frontal lobe.
Precisely. Now, the parietal lobe is all about processing sensory information,
okay,
particularly related to touch, temperature, pain, and spatial awareness. It helps us understand where our body is in space and how we interact with the world around us.
So when I'm navigating through a crowded room or feeling the warmth of a hug, that's my parietal lobe in action.
Exactly. It integrates all that sensory input to give us a coherent picture of our surroundings.
Okay.
Now, the occipital lobe, located at the back of the brain,
yeah,
it's dedicated to vision.
Okay.
It receives input from the eyes and processes it to create the visual world that we experience.
So everything from appreciating a beautiful sunset to recognizing a friend's face is happening in the occipital lobe.
Got it.
Got it. Okay.
It's a remarkable feat of neural processing. And finally, we have the temporal lobe, which plays a crucial role in hearing, memory, and language comprehension.
So if I'm listening to music, remembering my childhood, or understanding the word you're saying right now, that's my temporal lobe hard at work.
Absolutely. It's a hub for auditory processing, memory formation, and language comprehension.
This is incredible. We've covered so much ground already, and I'm starting to see how all these different regions of the brain work together to shape our thoughts and emotions and actions.
And we're just getting started.
I know.
This intricate symphony of neural activity is what allows us to experience the world, learn, remember, and ultimately define who we are.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've explored all the brain's different departments, but what really blows my mind is how this all comes together to form our memories and shape our learning experiences.
It's a process that still holds a lot of mysteries, but what we do know is that learning and memory are deeply intertwined.
Yeah.
One doesn't exist without the other.
Right, like two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
You can't store information if you haven't learned it, and learning is useless if you can't remember what you've learned.
Exactly. And one brain region that plays a starring role in this intricate dance is the hippocampus.
Ah, yes, the hippocampus. My notes mention it's tucked away deep inside the temporal lobe. What's its main gig?
Think of it as the brain's memory gatekeeper.
Okay.
It's responsible for taking those short-term memories, those fleeting bits of information, and transforming them into long-term memories that can be stored and retrieved later.
So it's like the hippocampus is deciding which memories are worthy of a permanent spot in our mental library.
I mean, it's more complex than a simple yes or no decision.
Right.
But you've got the right idea. The hippocampus is heavily involved in consolidating those memories, strengthening the connections between neurons to make those memories more enduring.
That's fascinating. But here's something I've always wondered about.
Yeah.
If our memories are so important, why aren't they stored in one super secure vault in the brain? Why spread them out across different regions?
That's a great question. And it gets at the heart of how memory works. It's not about storing a perfect, unchanging file in a single location. Instead, memories are distributed across vast networks of interconnected neurons.
So it's more like a giant web of associations with different threads of a memory woven throughout the brain.
Precisely. Think about a memory of like a childhood birthday party.
Okay.
You might have visual images of the cake, the decorations stored in the occipital lobe, sounds of laughter and music stored in your temporal lobe, and even emotional feelings associated with the events stored in other regions.
Wow, that's mind-blowing. It means that recalling a memory is like reactivating this entire network of associations, bringing those different threads together to create a cohesive experience.
Exactly. And the more connections a memory has, the stronger and more resilient it becomes.
That makes sense. It's like a well-worn path in the brain. The more you travel it, the easier it is to find your way back.
A perfect analogy. But here's another fascinating twist. You mentioned that memories are spread out. Well, even seemingly simple creatures like sea slugs, aplysia.
Sea slugs.
Yeah, right. Exhibit this distributed memory phenomenon.
Wait, sea slugs can form memories? I thought they were, well, just slugs.
You'd be surprised. Aplysia have actually played a crucial role in unraveling the mysteries of learning and memory. They have a relatively simple nervous system, which makes it easier for researchers to study the cellular changes that occur during learning.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What kind of learning can a sea slug do?
Well, researchers have studied various forms of learning in aplysia, including habituation and sensitization.
So break those down for me. What exactly do those terms mean?
So habituation is essentially getting used to a stimulus.
Okay.
Think about like a dripping faucet. At first, it might drive you crazy, but over time, you probably don't even notice it anymore.
Right.
Your brain has learned to tune it out because it's not a threat or something that requires your attention.
Makes sense. So how does that apply to the sea slug?
Aplysia have a reflex where they withdraw their gills when their siphon is touched.
Their siphon.
It's a tube-like structure they use for breathing.
Okay.
But if you repeatedly touch the siphon without causing any harm, they'll eventually stop withdrawing their gills. They've habituated to the
So
stimulus.
they've learned that the touch isn't dangerous and they can chill out and conserve their energy.
Exactly. Their nervous system has adapted to the repeated harmless stimulation.
Okay, that's habituation. What about sensitization?
Okay, so sensitization is the opposite. It's an increased response to a stimulus after a negative experience. Let's say you get a mild static shock from touching a doorknob.
Okay.
Afterward, you might be extra jumpy and flinch at even a light touch because your nervous system is primed to expect another shock.
So it's like your brain is saying, "Hey, be on high alert. Something potentially painful could happen again."
Precisely. And this sensitization has been observed in aplysia as well. Yeah, if you pair a touch to the siphon with a mild electric shock, they'll have an exaggerated gill withdrawal response to subsequent touches, even if those touches aren't paired with a shock.
So it's like they've learned to associate the touch with the pain and become hypersensitive to any stimulation.
Exactly. And what's incredible is that these simple forms of learning, habituation, and sensitization are reflected in physical changes at the cellular level.
You mean the connections between neurons are actually being altered as these sea slugs learn?
That's right. And it highlights a fundamental principle. Learning involves physically changing the structure and function of the brain, even in creatures as seemingly simple as a sea slug.
That's amazing. So if sea slugs are rewiring their brains as they learn, imagine the complexity of the changes happening in our own brains with our billions of neurons and trillions of connections.
It's truly mind-boggling, and it underscores the power of experience to shape who we are, not just at a psychological level, but at a physical, neurological level as well.
This is blowing my mind. Okay, we've talked about how memories are formed and stored, but what about retrieval? How do we access those memories when we need them?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Memory retrieval is still a bit of a black box, but we know it involves reactivating those same neural networks that were active when the memory was initially formed.
So it's like hitting the play button on a specific neural pathway,
Yeah.
bringing that memory back to life.
That's a great way to think about it, but it's not always a perfect playback. Our memories aren't static recordings, they're dynamic and can be influenced by various factors like our current mood, the context in which we're trying to recall the memory, and even subsequent experiences.
Right. Sometimes a memory feels crystal clear, like it happened yesterday, while other times it's fuzzy and hard to grasp.
Exactly. Memory is this ever-evolving process, not a fixed entity.
So we're constantly reshaping and reinterpreting our memories as we go through life. It really makes you realize that our brains are far more dynamic than we give them credit for.
Absolutely, and it challenges that notion of memory as a static file cabinet, doesn't it?
Totally. It's more like a living, breathing ecosystem, constantly evolving and adapting.
That's a great way to put it. And speaking of evolution, you know, it's fascinating to consider how even those simple learning processes that we talked about in sea slugs, they have implications for understanding the potential of human learning.
Right, you're right. If a creature with such a simple nervous system can adapt and modify its behavior based on experience, imagine the possibilities for us humans with our complex brains.
Yeah, it suggests that our capacity for learning and growth is truly remarkable, and it highlights the importance of lifelong learning, constantly challenging ourselves and embracing new experiences.
So we're not just stuck with the neural wiring we're born with. We can actually reshape our brains through our actions and experiences.
Exactly. Our brains are constantly rewiring themselves, forging new connections, and strengthening existing ones. Every new skill we acquire, every challenge we overcome, every interaction we have, it all leaves its mark on our neural landscape.
That's incredibly empowering.
Yeah.
It means we're not just passive recipients of information, but active architects of our own brain.
Exactly. And it underscores the importance of being intentional about the experiences we expose ourselves to, the information we consume, and the skills that we develop.
Yeah.
We have the power to shape our own neural pathways and, in turn, shape who we become.
Wow, that's That's a powerful thought. It really makes this deep dive into the nervous system all the more meaningful.
Yeah.
We've journeyed from the protective barriers that safeguard our brains to the intricate networks that allow us to learn, remember, and experience the world. It's been incredible.
It has, and the exploration doesn't end here.
Right.
There's still so much we don't know about the brain and how it works, but every new discovery brings us closer to understanding this remarkable symphony of our existence.
Well said. And I think you've left our listener with a lot to ponder. From the intricate workings of the blood-brain barrier to the surprising learning capabilities of sea slugs, we've covered a lot of ground today.
And it all points to one fundamental truth. The nervous system is a masterpiece of complexity and adaptability, orchestrating everything that makes us human.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey into the world of the nervous system. Until next time, keep those brains firing and never stop exploring the wonders within.